Good day, everyone. I am back with another episode of the Show Up or Shut Up podcast today. Today, our guest is Shay Kent. Shay is a mixed media artist living in Florida, and Shay is one of our Fodder School 3 instructors. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Shay is very, very sweet. We talk about a lot of things that are new topics for this podcast, and I think you're going to enjoy it. If you have not yet joined us in Fodder School 3, what are you waiting for? Come on, gang. It's time to join. We're going to be starting up with our new lessons in October. It's going to be amazing, like every other Fodder School is. We hope you'll join us. Okay, have fun with this episode. Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up, a podcast about prolific makers, specifically in the world of mixed media art. I'm your host, Wendy Solganic, also known as Willa Wanders, and I'm here to explore the ups and sometimes the downs of being a prolific mixed media artist. I've been a maker my entire life, and I've had four separate careers involving art. In each episode, we'll talk to artists about how they became prolific makers, why they make art, and the struggles they go through. We'll talk about being an online creative, social media, and how to navigate that world if that's what you're into. Whether you're a casual art lover of mixed media art and collage, or a serious artist making a living with art, whether you're a handmade book artist, an art journaler, a 3D assemblage creator, a fiber artist, a collage artist, or everything all at once, I hope you'll join me on this journey into the world of mixed media making. If you like this podcast, hit the subscribe button and leave a review. You can find me, Wendy, at willowwanders.com and on Instagram at willa.wanders and at fodder.school. Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up Day.
No,
nice to have you on. At this point, it's no secret. I'm doing an interview series with all of the new Fodder School 3 teachers, and everyone is also a Fodder Challenge teacher. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to interview you because there's still so much I have to learn about you. And first off, tell us two things, where you're from right now, where you live right now, and how people can find you so that if they want to check in and see your art as a reference point for the conversations that we're going to have today, that they can look at an Instagram page or a Facebook page or something.
Gotcha. Yes, my name is Shay Kent. I go by Shay and Michelle Studios. So you can find me at shaymichelle.com. That's my website. And Shay Michelle Studios on Instagram and Facebook. So I would love to see everyone there and say hello. I am in Tampa, Florida. It's always been my dream to live near the ocean. And about 10 years ago, my husband had a job opportunity to come out here, and we moved our family, and we take beach walks every night, and it's a huge part of my life, and I just love it.
Wow. So prior to living in Tampa, where did you grow up? Where have you lived in between?
Yep. So I grew up in Texas. You'll see actually a lot of that in some of the weird sayings that I have. My husband's, is that a Texas saying? What are you saying right now? I remember when we first got married, I would say, I used to could, like, you used to be able to do that. That's, he would say, I used to could. And so it's like its own special language a little bit. And then I lived in Colorado for a while, which was also really lovely, beautiful mountains and big sky. And we raised our kids half there and half here. So we got the mountains and the beach, and it's been really good for us.
So you've lived in a lot of really cool places.
Yeah, I've also lived in Hawaii for a little spot.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And how, like, what about your life makes it so that you've lived in Colorado, Hawaii, Florida, and I don't know which part of Texas you lived in, but maybe it was an awesome part.
Yeah.
What takes you to all these places?
Well, I think, I don't know, like circumstances, but I guess I do have a pretty adventurous, curious spirit and have a little bit of independence that way. So I've always liked to follow my nose and see what's out there. It sort of sounds like it might be a little unstable, but we've stayed at places for 10 years at a time. So a good large chunk. But you know, I kind of like to explore and see and yeah, live and
so there. That's so interesting. So if your husband knows this about you, does he work for himself or does he work for someone else?
No, he's corporate America. He's in technology. He's a sales guy.
So will he every 10 years kind of be like, so are you itching to move? Should I look for a job in another state?
Yeah. Well, no, when we met, we were in Colorado. We moved to Atlanta for a little while. So we've lived there as well. And then we wanted to be back closer to family. So we moved back to Colorado. And then we've always dreamed of being near the beach. He grew up near the beach also. And we had this job opportunity in Tampa. So we took it. But now that he can work from home, he's been able to do that for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. It makes us much more mobile, which is really nice.
But it sounds like you want to stay there because it's so nice.
Yeah, we do. We love the water. We love the water. We take those sunset walks and it makes it very hard to want to leave.
That's really interesting. Would you say that your love of the water and your life by the ocean is reflected in your art? Because I'm kind of thinking that that might be happening.
I think so. Yeah, it's not directly reflected. Like I don't do any kind of ocean type paintings, no landscapes, anything like that. But I do love the blues of the ocean. I often think if I'm using like a really dark blue, I think of the dark, deep waters of the ocean, that intrigue. I remember as a little girl growing up thinking about the water. I didn't live near the water, but I always had a fascination with it. And I thought, what's in there? What lives underneath those blue waters that you can't see?
Does it spook you? Because it's
no, it intrigues me. I think it's fascinating. So I think that does come through in my artwork because my artwork is very layered. And I always try to build intrigue into my artwork. I don't want things to be overly obvious. I want it to be where the viewer needs to step a little closer, look a little closer, ask themselves, what is that? What's that word? What's that texture? What's that weird, unexpected color? And so I build that into my artwork. So I would say, yeah, it probably does come across. I use a ton of blues in my work. So it's definitely there.
Fascinating. So tell us about the earliest art memories that you.
Oh, man. Yeah, they go way, way back. I remember sitting cross-legged next to my bed on the floor with my Pentel markers, my cheapy oil pastels, and just doodling away. I did art a lot just for fun. I remember even being in the classroom and doodling in the margins and getting in trouble for it. And so art has always been a part of my life. It's been such a safe place for me. I have always thought of it as a friend, really. When I look back, we didn't have anything back then that was like artistic voice, searching for your artistic voice, or I didn't know anything that was proper art techniques or anything like that. But looking back, I think my art practice, my creative practice, I would have never called it a practice, just making art next to my bed, was something that brought me tons of joy and comfort. I grew up in a difficult household, and for whatever reason, art just felt really safe and comforting and fun. I found that I really loved sharing it with my friends and connecting with people through it. And art and I go way back. I feel like we're a friendship. We have a friendship, a warm friendship. And even now today, I kind of guard that in our social media world. I say, I mother bear it. I put my arms around it and hold that relationship close.
All right, let's go back to that because that's something I would want to hear more about. But before we get to the mother bearing of your art, did you pursue art as a course of your education, or did you get pushed into some other quote unquote like way you can make a living kind of thing?
Right.
Or hold on, now I'm remembering, maybe you started having kids really young?
I did. Yes. So. Yep. I was in my 20s and I started a family young, and so I really wanted to stay home with them. That was a priority for me at that time. And so I stayed home with them for a long time and built my family. That was my number one thing. And for me, that's what I wanted to do. But at some point, they grew up and they went to school and I needed something. And it was around that same time that I had discovered art journaling online. So I think I'm going off on a little tangent here. So no, the answer is no. I didn't have proper training. I didn't go to art school or go through college. I have a degree in sign language interpreting. But I discovered art journaling through Oprah Winfrey. She offered a class with Kelly Ray Roberts and Brené Brown. They did Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Authenticity, I think it is. And chapter by chapter was an art journaling practice. And I'll never forget it. It was one of those things that like split time, like there's pre that and post. And it opened up a whole world of what the heck is this super cool art journaling with words and art, freedom and curiosity and meaning. And that was just the beginning.
And how old were your kids at this time? Or how old was your youngest child at the approximately?
So I would say she was around maybe 10.
Okay, so you still had a lot going with.
Oh, yes. I have three.
Cooking and cleaning and, you know, everything. Carpooling and buying clothes and shoes and everything that kids need. So what were you thinking? Oh, my gosh, I found this really cool hobby and I'm only going to have so much time to pursue it because my life is my family, obviously.
Well, I started off so simple, right? Like it was just me at the dining room table, some watercolor and a book. Like that was it. And eventually I had an IKEA rolly cart, the little blue cart, and it sat in my dining room. And I just took moments when I could. And it really didn't feel, I think it was different back then. We didn't have this pressure of pursuit of artistic voice. We didn't have this pressure of art every day. It was just something that was like a tool in my toolbox of life. It was fun. I was drawn to it. It didn't feel like a task or a chore. I just did it when I wanted to, did it when it felt good. There wasn't a lot of rules that I had for myself around it. So it made it feel very approachable and fun.
That sounds really healthy. I really am. I stand that approach.
Yeah.
You know what that word stan is? But it's like, no. It's been around a while. It's like, it means like you're like a big fan of that. You're a stan.
Okay.
So your 10-year-old daughter, your youngest, how old is she now?
She's about to be 21.
Okay. So about 11 years ago, you discovered art journaling and you had a very healthy relationship with it, which it supported your life.
Yes.
You didn't feel beholden or any kind of pressure because that was before the pressure of art every day came into your consciousness.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And for whatever reason, I'm still able to hold on to that in my art practice. Other places in my life, not so much. A lot of pressure, a lot of shoulds, a lot of control, all those types of things we all struggle with. But art continues to remain a safe, beautiful, fun place for me.
That's awesome. Okay, so 11 years ago, you discovered the art journaling. You're doing it very casually. And then what happens? Because you're not doing it. I would hardly say you're a casual art journaler at this point. I mean, you like fast forward, you end up becoming a teacher. You're teaching online. It's not 100% still casual.
Yes. I mean, yes, I suppose you could say it like that. Yeah. So it was casual for a long time. I was so intrigued. Oh my gosh. I mean, online art classes, come on. So fun, right? I know you love them too. Just couldn't get enough and all that learning and different styles and different teachers. It was just so much fun. And so I did that for a long time and it was kind of a dream to become a teacher. Like at that point, I didn't know how you did that, what that meant. I didn't know anything about technology. I mean, I can't say that strong enough. Like, I couldn't do anything with technology. And so it was just a little glimmer in my eye to start with, just a little niggly thought in the back of my head. And at some point, someone put out a call for teachers. And I was totally green. I had no idea what I was doing. I had never done it before. Didn't know anything about the technology. Hooked up my phone. I mean, I didn't even, it was a whim, really. Like, I was so inexperienced. I mean, I had no experience, none. And I put together a little video. And I don't know, there was like, I can't remember, a couple hundred applicants in 10 spots, and I got one. And I couldn't believe it. I was stunned. And that was the beginning. And I have just grown and taught myself and learned and have taught in-person workshops, online workshops, and shared it and just loved that part.
How did your relationship with your art change when you went from, I'm the student, I'm taking a million online art courses, I do this when I want, this is all determined by me. Did anything change when you got picked to be a teacher? Did anything in your mind change? Did your approach change? Or are you still holding on to, and again, I guess this is going to get to that question where you're saying you protect it. Are you still able to be protective, or do you feel like you have a different kind of relationship with it?
So for my own person, my own self, I would say the relationship has remained the same. But I will say that I do have maybe like a different branch. You saw it as branches, a different branch in my relationship to art, which is about the student. So I really am thinking about the student. I have a lot of empathy and care and awareness of the student. So I'm always thinking about what questions might they have? What might they struggle with? How can I make this approachable? How can I make it interesting? So when I'm developing a project for students, for a class, that is full on. But even when I do my own personal projects in my head, I'm still teaching. I'm explaining it. I'm observing it. I'm thinking about, why did I put that there? How do I make that line here? And I've always had that. Even when I was younger, I've just always been a natural teacher. And so I've always had that instructor teacher voice in my head where I'm explaining it and thinking about different approaches. And so I guess in that way, I don't think about my art just for myself, but I think about it for other people as well.
So what are you saying, that like when you are creating now just for fun, just for you, just for your own relaxation, you're also thinking about the possible student? Or are you saying, I can create just for me and I can block out the whole, I'm an online teacher, I'm an in-person teacher, part of that journey that you're on?
Yeah, it feels, I mean, I think it makes me more curious and observant of my own practice.
Yes.
Like, how do I do what I do? Why do I do what I do? I don't see it as a lockdown, as a burden. I see it as something that I want to share. It's just a very natural part of sharing. I make a chili recipe because I'm from Texas, so I make a lot of chili. And you know how people are real proprietary over their recipes sometimes, right? They don't want to give you the secret ingredient. And I think, oh man, I would never be like that. I would be sharing that recipe with every single person who ever wanted it because I would think, this is so yummy. You have to try this. And so I feel that way with art too. There's nothing proprietary about my practice. But I do still feel, I mean, I guess I want to be clear. I'm not always in teacher mode. It all feels very integrated to me. It doesn't feel like I have to shut one part down in order to have the other part. I feel like they both get to exist together and they're very much companions and friends and have a healthy relationship to each other. Now, sometimes, I mean, let me be clear here. I'm talking about the actual making of art, the actual art. I often feel insecure about my business, my art business. Sometimes I feel like, is it enough? Is it relevant? Will it get lost in a sea of so many art classes? How do I make it approachable? So that to me is a different thing. I have more struggle with that than I do the actual art.
That's an interesting conversation. So wait, before we go there, I want to ask you to paint just a little bit of a picture of the types of art that you're attracted to. So I'm getting from this conversation that you do a lot of art journaling. When we approached you to be a Fodder School 3 teacher, it was with the requirement that we are not a school for art journaling. I definitely believe there are amazing art journaling schools out there. And my goal has always been to be in a separate category because I feel like that category is already very well covered in the world. So we asked you to come in and teach something other than art journaling. So as far as the type of art that you are drawn to make on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis, would you say it's primarily in a journal and sometimes outside of a journal? Is it never outside of a journal until we asked you to work outside of a journal? How did that work out for you?
No, I would definitely say I work in all places. So I'll work in a journal. I've worked on large canvases, small canvases, individual sheets of paper. Sometimes I actually really love doing that because there's so much freedom in that. I worked on tags. I've worked all usually mixed media. I'm not a pottery person, so it's usually on a substrate. But as far as the actual substrate, no, I've worked all over the place. So when you asked me to do something different, it was a natural fit. And one of my main things that I love to do is to create a story and lead the students through a little bit of self-exploration, a little bit more than just the art. And the project that we created, the project I created for Fodder School, very much lends itself to that in a way that I think the student is really going to feel connected and inspired and, I don't know, joyful, healed. I think it's going to be a really great experience.
I love that about your approach, that it's based on kind of looking inward and thinking about your story and translating that story into a three-dimensional piece of art, I think is so cool. Can you talk more about what your project is without giving it all away, letting on to people before? We have to keep some amount of excitement for when your month comes in Fodder School, but maybe you could talk a little bit about what your project is so people kind of have an idea.
I don't know what to say. Do you want to introduce it so I know, so I can follow you? Because I don't know how much to say. Just do a little blurb and then I'll fill in. Can we do that?
Well, here's what I know about it. It's three-dimensional. It definitely involves people's own personal ephemera. Like, it's very personal. A lot of times in Fodder School, we're working with collage fodder that we create that's based on color and texture and pattern and those kinds of things. But this is a little bit different. This really is a lot different, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how it's different, because I think that's probably the most dramatic thing about it.
Yes. Yeah, it is different. And I don't know that I've seen anything quite like it out there anywhere, to my knowledge. So yes, it is going to be extremely personal. The ephemera, we're going to walk through the collection of the ephemera. It's going to be so unique and personal. It's going to hold your life stories. What is important to you? What's meaningful to you? Oh my gosh, we're going to share it with each other. We're going to share why this piece of ephemera means something. What's the story behind that piece? And when you take the class, you'll see it's very specific. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And I really see it as a vehicle for getting to know each other better on a deeper level and having that sort of aha, me too moment with each other. And then I think there's sort of the process of creating the piece that's going to be really like a self-exploration kind of kindness towards yourself. And then once it's finished, being able to observe and continue to remember your life stories through this piece of work. It's very unique, very special. And I just cannot wait to see what comes out of it.
Just hearing you talk about it, all of these ideas came like flooding into my brain. About
exactly what I'm hoping for. Yeah.
My story and just stuff I've discovered recently about my story that I didn't even know was part of who I am, and like how I could take those elements and go on like a journey and create a piece of art that's based on that part of who I am, that's really exciting.
Yes. Yeah. It's going to be a uber personalized piece of work.
I love that.
That I think people are going to just feel so heart connected. It's just going to connect. They're going to feel so connected to their heart space, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm very excited. We have not determined who's going what month. So we don't know yet what month Shay will be or what month anybody else will be. But that'll happen within a month. We'll figure that out. But so anyway. All right. So back to your story of your business and your art and all of that. Now that your daughter is 21, are you feeling like this is a full-time gig for you, or is it still a part-time gig for you? Is it happily a part-time gig?
No, it's definitely a full-time gig. I'm very devoted to it. I spend a lot of time in the business and creating classes sort of in a similar vein to what we're talking about, where there's a self-exploration part. I say that I create art workshops that are like a spa for your creative soul. So there's a deeply meaningful piece. And so no, I create online classes and spend a good amount of time doing it.
Tell me more about how your husband is involved. Because I do remember, I think where I first came into contact with you was through another year-long art journaling program, or a year-long art journaling program, not another one, but a year-long art journaling program where I first saw you and saw your work. And I was very intrigued by the quality of your video content because, I mean, it's way superior to anything that I create. It's superior to, honestly, like what is required to work in this industry. So tell me about why you do that and how you do that, because it's really nice. I mean, it's lovely when you're a student to witness that and to experience that. And you're one of the only people who is, I think, producing video content at a higher level.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was really important to me. So we have two cameras, one that's down on the table with the artwork and then one that's on my face. Okay. And so we blend the two videos together into one video so you can continue throughout the process to see my face. I always feel, whenever I watch someone else make videos, I'm always so sad when the artist goes away. Then have the talking head at the beginning, hello, hi, welcome. And then they're gone the whole rest of the time. And I always have that sinking feeling like, come back. I want to see your face. I want to see your expression. I want to feel like I'm in the room with you. If I walked into an artist studio and sat at their table, I would be able to see their face as they were instructing me. I would see their body language. You really glean so much from that instruction that's not just what you see in the actual artwork itself. That was super important to me, to have two camera angles and to continue to be a part of that process. And I really want that student, whoever's watching, to feel welcomed, to feel like they're sitting right across from the table from me. And my husband is very techie. He's always been very techie and he's very sweet. And so he edits all of my videos and it is a real labor of love. I'm talking hours here, okay? It takes a long time to create a video like this, but it's been so fun because we are simultaneously learning. Like I'm getting better at the actual video piece, at the recording, at the artwork, at the teaching, at all of those kind of things. I do a little bit with the editing as well. I definitely have something to say about when I want things to go to my face, when I want it to go down, what kind of music we add, the tone, the feel. But he is the very technical minutiae, hairline to the second of when things cut. And so we sit side by side on the couch and well, he does a lot without me, but then we sit side by side at the end and we talk it through and it's been really fun. And he's so cute. He says, oh, you're so fun to edit because you're just so fun to watch. You're so easy. And every time he kind of gets this look in his eye and he kind of shakes his head and he goes, you're so cute. So I just, whenever I'm doing something in the video, I just know if I do something, because I'm kind of silly and I'm kind of slangy and I'm a goofball a little bit. And I'm deep, but I'm also a goofball. And so I'll do some goofball something and he's going to be sitting on the couch going, "You're so cute." And I can feel him. I'm with the student the whole time. But there are moments when I'm recording something where I'm like, "Hi, Sean." Hey, Sean. And so it's kind of fun.
So it's very interesting that your husband is involved and that the quality of your videos is very different and it's more produced than other online art content. I mean, there's a lot of online art content, okay? There's companies that send film crews and producers and directors to your location and they do a whole thing. And I'm talking about people without that doing it in their homes. So of the people that I can think of that have the higher quality content, it's a team. It's the artist and their husband. So I'm not surprised at all when I heard that your husband is doing the editing.
Yeah, it would be a real undertaking to do it as a solo person. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying nobody does this as a solo person because I'm sure there are people who do, but it does seem like people who naturally have the kind of dynamic where it's a team and one person is really good on the technical aspects and the other person is really good on the artistry aspects. It's like a winning formula. But most people are not going to find themselves in that position. Like I have a husband who's super techie, but he owns his own factory and he's working all the time. He's not working on my business.
Right, totally.
I wish he was. My son, who's 15, is my in-house tech guy. So he's the one who set up all the new equipment for the podcasting. And without him, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But he's not about to start filming and editing live videos.
Oh, my gosh. I know teenagers, 20-year-olds, they're like the best for technology.
The best.
Yeah, they know it all. It's like in their blood.
It is. They don't even know. It's like the craziest things. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense to me about why your videos are the way that they are. They're really beautiful. They're an experience. Again, I'm not ragging on everyone else's. Everyone else's are wonderful. Okay. All online art content is wonderful. But there's definitely some that stands out and you know that it's a little bit different. You may not understand why it's different, but it is different.
Right. Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And let's see, I wanted to talk about the thing that you mentioned about the business insecurities. This is not a business podcast. I'm sure there's a lot of wonderful art business podcasts out there and people probably know what those are if people are interested. But since I have you on and since I'm another person within art business, we may as well talk about some of the struggles that come along with having an online art business, an online teaching art career, because I think everyone has different struggles. It's not, I don't know if people look at this and think this is some kind of easy job or whatever, but I'm sure it comes with challenges for everyone. So what would you say your biggest fear is or your biggest struggle is about it? What are you thinking? I guess, what negative thoughts are you thinking?
Oh, yeah, it's hard. That there is no doubt about that. It's a tough business. It is saturated. You are working against an algorithm. You are even working against a culture, like an Instagram social media culture. You are one of many. And there's a lot of conflicting. Be authentic. But of course, we all know you need to curate your Instagram feed. That's not authentic. Don't work too hard, but you know, you really need to get these things in place and things like that. So I struggle with that bit. I really struggle with the loneliness of it. That is a real thing. That's a real thing to be sitting in your studio. I mean, I love my studio and I have so many good feelings and memories or experiences, I should say. But ultimately, you still are alone a lot. It's a solo business. And unless you're out teaching classes with people, you're in your house by yourself. And I struggle with that. I struggle with that integration with other people on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, I totally know. I 100% share that struggle. I had a career where I worked outside of my home for 15 years, like a very 9-to-5 type job, where I went into an office, saw the same people every day. It was wonderful.
Wow.
I loved being with people and building a company with people. I would love to work with people now, but this business is different. It's a bunch of people working around the world. It is lonelier, a lot lonelier, and there's no built-in everyday camaraderie around it. There's the times when I'm lucky enough to be able to record a podcast episode, or maybe I have an online meeting, or we have a Zoom, let's say. We had a Zoom last night for fodder school, which was lovely, but it's not consistent. And it's not, and it's also not local. And I tried pretty hard, actually, to organize a local crafters meetup in my town. And that also was a lot of work.
Right.
And it worked okay. It was pretty good. I decided to take the summer off, and I'm actually so glad that I did, because getting ready for Fodder Challenge and Fodder School 3 is more than a full-time job. So I'm really glad that I said, okay, guys, we're going to take a break for the summer on our crafting meetup. But my point in mentioning all this is I'm sharing that exact same struggle. Is sometimes it just feels like this is a lonely job, and that's one downside of it. Sometimes I think if I didn't have this job, I'd probably be looking for a job outside.
Yes, I agree. It is hard, and I wish there was a bridge. I wish there was a way to alleviate that. I'm always racking my brain trying to figure it out. Sounds like you are too. Like, how do you create more opportunity to relate to people? Because you're right, you don't have that daily interaction with people to build those relationations.
So back in my early 20s, I was a potter, and I was a member at it wasn't really a co-op because there was no cooperative ownership, but there was one owner and you paid a monthly fee and you got access to a certain number of inches in the kiln, and you could come and go as you pleased and use all the wheels, and you bought your own supplies, but they had giant tables and all the glazes, and it was amazing. It was literally like one of the best periods of my life. I basically showed up every day at the pottery studio. I made whatever I wanted to. And then at the end of the day, when it was finished, like, we would have a sale twice a year. And I thought maybe I would turn this into some type of business, because I just wanted to make so much pottery. When you want to make a lot of things, you have to consider, is there a way that I could unload some of it?
Right.
Or make a living doing some of it. But the part where I was in an artistic space with other artists who showed up consistently, like, really close friendships were formed. We would have lunch together every Saturday and then go back to the studio. And it was just so much fun.
Yeah, that sounds dreamy.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like a combo.
It is. And it's like I'm racking my brain to kind of figure out, well, what would I have to do now in my life to recreate that kind of incredible experience? And so I started looking into, well, maybe I should move my studio out of my home. Is there a group studio space, cooperative space in my town, in my region, that I should move into? Because then I will have more interaction with other human beings. And I'm like weighing the pros and cons. You have to pay the rent. It's not in your home. And it's, yeah, I might be less lonely, but I also won't be having all of my art supplies around me all the time, because there would be a home life and there would be a studio life. Right now, home and studio, it's all mixed up together. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's nice too.
So it's like a catch 22. It's if you move out, and also if I still have a 15-year-old who has to be transported to and from school every day, and that's on me. So it's complicated. But if I was 5 years later than now, and I think I would even be lonelier in 5 years, I might be looking at renting space in a cooperative studio environment and running my whole business out of there and just getting up in the morning, leaving the house at 8:30, coming home at 5:30 or 6 and just doing all my work from there. So that's always something that's on my mind as a possibility. But have you ever looked into moving your studio out of your house?
Yes, for sure. And near where in Tampa Bay, there's a town called St. Petersburg, which is really awesome. And there's a load of artists. And I think it's not a huge city. It's a smaller city, but it's got there's 7 museums. I mean, it's just such a cool place, but it's 45 minutes from where I am now. And so that feels like a little bit of a stretch from we're wanting to do that every day, but we've talked about moving down there at some point. And so that's definitely been where I am right now. I don't think there's a lot of studio space. Even down there, it might be tricky. I'd probably have to get on a wait list, but it's something that I've considered. I've never done it before, so maybe I would have to ask around and see. Because what you're talking about with the pottery, it's like you have to come out and mingle with people because you share a kiln when you share, like,
yeah, you have to.
It lends itself.
Exactly.
No, but I like art. Like painting, will people, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've never done it, so I'd have to try it. But will they all come out? Is there a reason for us to intermingle? How does that?
It would have to be that there was within the larger space a cooperative maker space where people hung out and made and chatted. Then it would be worth doing. But you're completely right. And I definitely considered that. If the point is just to move into one of these spaces, but you're in your own space and you're not really meeting other people, then you just have the same thing, different location with a much longer drive.
Right.
So it has to be something way more idyllic than just a space in a building.
Right. Do you ever want to teach in person?
So before I ever became an online teacher, I was teaching in person. And that's interesting. I should think more about doing maybe a once a week thing. I was teaching in my dining room, which wasn't a horrible thing. It worked. But really, it would be more ideal if there was a messy space I could teach in, because then I could do mixed media art. I was doing just watercolors because it was a lot safer. And my dining room is nice and I didn't want to get acrylic paint everywhere. And it's possible that within the next few months, my basement will open up and then I could possibly teach something in my basement. Actually, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I've thought about the same thing, about maybe teaching like a 6-week, once a week for 6-week series.
That's how I did the watercolor class. It was intro to watercolors and it was 6 weeks. And it was like the same day every week. And then when that was over, a new group of people filtered in. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That will help alleviate that feeling. And you know what? Okay. If you have a home where you could have a space where like 6, 8, or 10 people could sit around a table and take a class from you. Another thing could be that you have once a week lessons, but once a week, like for 3 hours, open studio space, where it's just like, if you're taking lessons with me and you just want to come make and know that other people will be there, like it'll be, I'm just making this up, like Monday is the lesson, Thursday is the open studio space. I don't know. That's kind of how you create that dynamic of friendliness and camaraderie and making, when people kind of commit to, okay, on the same day, at the same time, I'm going to the same space, and you show up and friendships are made.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. I want to come. I'm coming to that.
You're coming to that. I mean, I know that there are people like Andrea in San Jose has a work of art studio. And I don't know if you're familiar with Andrea, but I was lucky enough to meet her there and visit with her. And I know that it's been difficult for her to get people in person after the pandemic, but I do see that's happening more and more. So I do think that more and more people are more willing to meet in person. It's not totally over yet. There's still a lot of people who have medical issues that feel like they have to keep isolated.
Right. That's very true.
So that is still kind of an issue. But I don't know. I mean, we're definitely thinking the same thing. Like, where is my social life going to, how is my social life going to recover? Because working by myself for myself can get kind of lonely.
Totally. Totally. And then a lot of things went away over the pandemic. A lot of structures and like in-person classes. I know a lot of things in my town just don't exist anymore. The teachers are gone. The classes aren't there. The groups, it's just beginning to start again. And so a lot of the places where you could plug in aren't there. So I think we're all, it seems like we're all hungry for that. Hungry yes. for that face-to-face interaction, something deeper, something that's not so shallow that we find on social media, something that where we can come together and know each other, support each other, and be seen.
Yeah, it's really yeah. important. I mean, one of the other things I could do and anyone listening could do is, in addition to taking all the online classes that we love, is find a local class. Even me or you, like someone who's taken a lot of art classes, like maybe I just show up at a local art class, not because I think, oh, I'm going to learn something, but just because if you're in a live art class, you're going to be with other people who are right. interested in making art, and you could definitely make friendships there. I mean, that was how I made a lot of friendships in my early 20s, was taking classes at Santa Monica College and UCLA Extension. And I made really good friends.
For sure.
Taking yeah. classes. And then there's always, you could always offer to teach at those locations too. So I don't, like you said, there's, it kind of dried up and stuff went away, but I bet you there's centers that want to reopen and they want to have teachers come back. And you, what's to say you couldn't be one of the teachers?
Right. Yeah, for sure. I've definitely thought of that.
So yeah, we're in that like in-between phase, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm very like appreciative of what happened as a result of everyone being in their homes, which is I was able to launch a business and employ a lot of people and create something amazing and bring something to life that was inside of me. And that's all been really good. But yeah, it needs to be balanced out. It can't just be like 7 days a week I'm in my family room on the couch with my computer.
Absolutely. I hear ya.
Because that's where I do a lot of my work.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So let's talk more about you. So what do you see as other sort of challenges? And let's try to figure out how to overcome them, because this is kind of a good conversation because there's a lot of good coming out of it.
Right. You are challenges within the business?
Yeah, because like, yeah. you mentioned it. And I think a lot of people actually do love to hear about the business side of things.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, oh my goodness, insecurity. Is it relevant? Will people like it? Right now, I'm wanting to create a class that is a little bit different. It's going to be definitely have a stronger component to that self-exploration side in a way that I haven't really seen yet or seen before. And I'm nervous about it. It's new. It's different. And so what will people think? It's something that's really from my heart, something really embedded within me, something I've wanted to do for years. So you can imagine if you've got this little vision inside your heart that just sits there for a few years, the thought of putting that out there and seeing I'm going to build it, will they come? Is scary, really scary. Like you almost don't want to do it because you don't want to know the answer, even though I think people will love it. But you don't know. It's really busy. There's a lot of stuff out there and it can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming to keep up with what's going on. It can be overwhelming to not compare yourself to others. And sometimes I find in business, it's really hard to figure out what's actually working or not, because you don't have coworkers, so you can't really right. compare yourself. You don't have bosses. You don't really have mentors. It's just you, mostly. I'm part of a business group right now, so that's helped a little bit with that. But like I might put something out and it could be a huge success, but I don't even know for me, for my phase of business. Because, or it could be a failure. I don't know. And so it's hard to get that gauge. It's hard to always be looking at analytics, always be judging yourself off an analytic. I love what I do. I love the creation of classes. I love the artwork. I even love the technology. I love building the website. I love so much about my business. I mean, I deeply love it. But I very much dislike the hustle culture. I dislike how shallow I feel you have to be because everything is so fast and quick and gimmicky. And look at me. I'm really longing for something deeper, something more real and meaningful, something less. I mean, I hate to use this word authentic because we just throw it around now all over the place. But I mean, like for real authentic, like a real authentic. And that includes vulnerability and failure and sometimes pain. And I know we don't like to talk about that because we like everything to be good, but that is a part of life. And so I wish that there was more validation of the real human experience. And I think people are looking for that. But I don't know that sometimes that hustle culture, that hashtag girl boss, doesn't really encompass the reality of what it means to own your own business or even to just be a person.
Well, I definitely know, but I also, like, I wonder if you've got an idea about protecting something, protecting yourself, that doesn't necessarily align with what's required.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, because when you're describing your concerns, and I'm just thinking, I only have my own experience to talk about, but I try to not censor myself too much. I have like probably a couple like moral, ethical rules in place. I'm not going to say something that's going to hurt another person publicly. I'm not going to say something that's going to hurt a family. You know what I mean? There's places where there's, you don't go. That's like a no-go zone. But I do think that there's kind of a wide and possibly wider range of go zone where, again, you don't have to expose yourself, but you could connect with other people in deeper ways by being more honest about your life's experiences. And I think we can all always do this more. Something that I've been somewhat vocal about is like my own personal history with diet culture and my body image issues and aging and those kind of things, which are very difficult to talk about. But when I do talk about them, I'm like rewarded greatly because that's the human experience. And a lot of people have a lot of history with these things. So I don't know. I would encourage you to be less fearful about being vulnerable, but at the same time, protect yourself. So I'm, without going into like details about stuff, I don't know. I think there are ways to be really vulnerable. I think asking questions on public social media is always a good way to invite conversation and connection. And sometimes that conversation can literally be like, I launched a conversation yesterday about how I'm struggling with a certain change on Instagram and about how when you now search a hashtag, instead of seeing all the results, Instagram is limiting us to seeing popular posts using that hashtag and recent popular posts. And because I was willing to be vulnerable about how that made me feel and how upset I was and insecure and questioning and fearful, because I used that feature all the time, it really opened up like a wonderful conversation. And I ended up learning a ton of stuff and feeling not so alone. And I mean, I really don't feel alone because part of me was thinking, am I the only person using this feature? Am I the only one who searches hashtag fodder school every day? But it turns out that all the small business owners search their hashtags every day.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really great. And I think you're very good at that. I think you're very good at that on the spot, current, real. You have a real voice in what you write about. It definitely feels like how you feel in that current moment. And there is a certain vulnerability that I think you portray in a good way. And so I appreciate that encouragement because I think you're probably right. I think there is more that I could share, more that I could say. And it's definitely a baby step and a lot of wisdom in figuring out how to do that. But I think you're right. I think there is a way to share more vulnerably in a way that will breed connection. And yeah, that less alone feeling and yeah, more something more authentic.
It's so interesting, the struggles that we have that are the same and the struggles that we have that are different. And it's all based on how we were brought up, things we were told, the way we were conditioned. You might have grown up in a family where people were like, telling you, like shushing you all the time and saying, don't talk about your feelings. Everyone is so influenced by the conditioning that we were exposed to.
For sure. Absolutely. That all plays into everything.
It creates how we think. So it's possible that because I grew up in a different home than you, that I don't have the same relationship with being very like careful. You know what I mean? I'm a little less careful than probably a lot of people, but I think I'm just careful enough because I realize again, you don't want to be vulnerable to the point where you're hurting yourself or other people, right? You don't want that. But there's also a lot of place for vulnerability where you're helping yourself and other people. So if you can kind of figure out where that sweet spot is.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like Instagram is an inauthentic place. I actually have found a ton of authenticity on Instagram from the people who are willing to open up. So that might be like what you like, your like maybe your own perspective and your own fears projected onto Instagram, let's say. Thinking, oh, that's a fake place. It's only fake if you want it. If you're not willing to step your toe into the vulnerability thing. If you step your toe in, there's a lot of amazing connection.
Yeah. Yeah, I have seen that too. I have had some really good connections to people through Instagram. I guess I'm thinking more like on a whole, social media on a whole, but it does feel like you can carve something out for yourself in a way that feels more authentic. And like even in our mixed media community, our art community, there are so many nice and kind and interesting people for sure.
But it's funny, now something else came into my head. Of course, there are elements to it that can feel very inauthentic. I want to acknowledge that. There are things. I will point out that I have felt that at times where maybe I'm putting myself into something and thinking that I'm developing a quote unquote real relationship with someone, only to find out that person didn't think it was a real relationship. Like that person was just doing it for business purposes, let's just say. And that can feel really inauthentic because I have definitely opened myself up to a lot of people, a lot of experiences where I have been very let down. So I'm not saying like Instagram is some kind of perfect place. It's definitely not.
Right. But it does feel like I see what you're saying as far as it reminds me of building that relationship. Like I think of building a relationship to your art practice. That's how I often refer to it. And like, how do you build your relationship towards that vulnerability that you have in that exposure of being in an online world and an online business? How do you cultivate that relationship?
I think you have to be willing to take risks and get hurt. I'm just thinking of a very particular situation where I was in a group collaboration and something happened in my life. And I was like, I felt a connection with these people that I was in this collaboration with. And so this thing happened in my life and I jumped into the DM group and I was like, oh my gosh, has anybody had any experience with XYZ? Because I just had this thing happen in my life. And these were people I was in communication with. We were doing something together. And so that's who I went to tell my big secret to. And I got crickets back. I got no response at all. And that is definitely like where I've experienced that feeling of, okay, this isn't real connection. Like this, yeah. I thought this was authentic connection, or I wanted it to be authentic connection, but this is not authentic connection. Because if anybody here was authentically connected to me, they would have replied.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it's challenging. I'm sure it's challenging. I mean, yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
And we're all kind of navigating, or most of us are navigating some form of online relationship with somebody. And when does it cross the line into true friendship? And when is it business relationship? And when is it just high level? And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's challenging. I have some, what I feel like are very true friendships that have grown out of social media, like a few very close ones where I talk on the phone with them regularly. We share big life things with each other. But that kind of deep connection is rare. And then more, it's something in between deep, deep. I know what's going on with you. If I haven't heard from you, I'm going to check in on you.
Right.
But that's a real connection.
Yeah.
And then oftentimes it's more like, I care about this person, but nobody has the bandwidth, right, to worry about 20,000 people.
Right. It's not natural.
It's not natural. So there is a limitation. I guess there is always going to be a limitation to how real that is, right?
Right. Right.
Because nobody would have the bandwidth to, like, people who you follow and follow you or whatever, right? You cannot develop close relationships with all of those people.
Right.
But we try to have something different. Again, I do care about those people, not in the way that I'm going to be calling them on the phone, but I do have a genuine care for all of the people that I interact with.
Yeah, I would totally agree, for sure.
Yeah, this navigating this whole world has been very interesting. And you mentioned something about feeling a little bit overwhelmed by the number of people that you're competing with. And that is something that I often mention to people who ask me about what I do for a living now. One of the first things I tell them is about how competitive this industry is, that there's a lot of choice and that there's a lot of competition for people's attention.
Yes.
Because so many people are capable and willing and available to do online art instruction that, in a way, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I'm just going to throw this out there as a topic for conversation is, and it is going to relate to what you said about you launching this course that's deeply personal and very different. I found that it helps me the more I can focus on releasing the connection to the outcome. And I'm not saying it's easy to do that. It's challenging. But it's like if I can remind myself that the reward is the experience of making the class. The reward is that I do actually love editing video.
Yeah, I do
actually enjoy doing customer service. I do enjoy managing my business. And if I let go, or again, remind myself to let go, because I do know, like, my intellectual part of my head knows that this industry is wildly competitive. That's
right.
Reality. And I don't know if you've thought about why it's wildly competitive, but I mean, I've definitely thought about why it is. Have you thought about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's grown and grown. I think especially, I mean, it was growing before, but when the pandemic came and all the artists who were working in studios and still selling in shows and things like that couldn't do that anymore, they went to online classes. And so suddenly lots of people learned, lots of people wanted to do it. And it's kind of cool because there's so much amazing training. I think it is phenomenal that just a regular person without any education in any of this technology can just go teach themselves. You can just learn.
That's exactly what it is.
Cool.
It's because people can teach themselves. They don't have to go to school for it.
Yeah,
it's doable. I would say I am not a technologically competent person, compared to our kids who are 15 and 20.
Yeah.
But if I was able to learn how to make and film video and edit it and do everything that I'm doing now, that means that the barriers to entry are really low. And of course, people are going to flood into an economy where the barriers to entry are low, into an industry where the barriers to entry are low.
And yeah, again, that's the way to put it.
Yeah. Another reason to let go. It's like, I can't control the outcome. I can't control the outcome. All I can control is what I show up every day and the mission that I have.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so good to be rooted in that too, especially if for the love of the business and the love of the creation and love of what you're putting out there. I think that's really wonderful. Yeah.
I love my customers, my participants. Like, if I can show up every day and give them a great experience and just try to not focus on the fact that every day they're, because I was a new art teacher 2 years ago. So I'm the person who came, you know, I'm one of the masses that came in and flooded this. How long have you been doing online art teaching?
Ooh.
A lot longer than me.
Yeah, a few years longer. I can't really remember.
At least,
maybe, well, 4 or 5 years.
Right. So you're like, you've got double time on me. So you probably remember a time when there were a lot fewer.
Absolutely. And a lot fewer, a lot more expensive and bigger. They were like 6 week courses. And that was sort of what was on the market. There were 6 week courses, $350. And that seemed to be the standard back then.
So that's another just interesting, really normal life cycle of an economy. It's the more people that flood in, there's downward price pressure. You're going to have to give more for less. It's like, this is so standard. It's so standard and par for the course. Like, that, this is how all industries evolve over time. So at first you have like the people who are in there early and they can charge a lot. And then the more people that come in, you can't charge as much because it's competition. It's capitalism. I mean, we're basically like, we're involved in a capitalistic enterprise.
What do you think is next?
What do I think is next? Yeah. Oh, I don't even know if I have an idea of what is next.
Yeah. Kind of the Wild West. What's next? I know for myself, I'm craving something more exclusive. I want it to swing upward again, where it's a more expensive price point, a deeper, richer experience, something more personalized and smaller. Something that's what I'm craving myself.
So my advice would be, if I'm going to put on my like business advisor hat, you didn't ask me to do this, but I'll just say it. My best successes in life have always been where I followed what I wanted. So if you feel really strongly that you have this idea for something, that if someone created that thing, that you would buy it because that's so deeply what you crave. Like, fodder school truly is my craving.
Yeah.
That's why it exists, because it's like what I crave. And you can't control having these cravings, in my opinion. Like, this is why when people be like, oh, you could just come up with a new idea for a business. It's if only it were so simple. I don't think it works like that. I think it comes from like a magical place where suddenly you have this overwhelming feeling that you really need something. You really want something. If it existed, you would buy it. And then follow that and have that be your driver.
Yeah.
It may not be next for everybody, but I promise you it will be next for enough people. If you're feeling that, there's probably a lot of other people who are feeling that thing too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. That's so true. That's really cool too. It's cool that you created Fodder School from that, in that vein. And it shows. I think it shows because you have such community excitement. You yourself participate in all of the lessons. I can tell that what you're saying about you're craving something like Fodder School, I can see it. You can see it.
Yeah. I think you'll find people who are craving what you're craving. Because I do think like the market of people who are interested in online art courses is big enough that there can be all of these different experiences and all of these different subsets. It's just because Fodder School exists does not mean that 20 other things cannot exist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so true.
There does seem to be a lot of room for a lot of different important, amazing experiences.
Right. Yeah, I'm just getting ready to sit down and develop it. So I'm going to really put down, like, what is that dream course? What would it be? What would it entail? How would it support people? How would we build community within it? How would we nurture ourselves and explore parts of ourselves? And how would we use art to do it? And, like, what would there be a live component? Would there be, I don't want to give too much away because I'm kind of thinking of some special surprises that I don't really see too much out there. But what would that course, just like you're saying, like I would take this course. I wish I had this course that I'm thinking of. And so
what
are the special elements in there that would just feel so nurturing, exciting, inspiring, fun? And so that's next to my docket to sit down, figure all of that out and put something together.
I think you will attract the people that are craving what you're craving. And the other thing that I want to say is, with every experience that I've launched in the last few years, it always involves a tremendous amount of risk and commitment on my part. So there's always an element of, I could be committing to 12 to 15 months of full-time plus work for little to no pay.
Yes, that's a thing, isn't it?
That is a very real thing. And I'm very fortunate in my finances of my family are not on the edge, like on the borderline where, you know, if I don't have income coming in, it's going to be like really bad. So I've been able to take risks that maybe other people would be like, oh, well, I could not do that. I have to guarantee that I'm going to have income because I need to have income to pay my rent. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm lucky in that sense. And at the same time, the things that I've done that have been really successful all came with, well, I'm committing to do this thing, even if there is no financial reward, because I have no idea if this thing that I crave is something that anybody else craves.
Let me ask you, how do you manage? Okay, so I get that on the big scope. How do you manage that on the day to day? How does that play out for you? Do you vacillate? Do you hold true to that every day? Do you struggle with that? How does that look for you?
I have not struggled with it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. It's just, okay, this is what I'm doing. I think because it's to your point of, I'm craving this thing. I guess at the end of the day, if me and five other people want it, then even though I'm like, what I'm saying is I'm sacrificing myself to this.
Okay.
Because this is what I want so badly, that even if I make no money and I only work really hard on it for the 12 or 15 months that it's going to require, I will have gotten what I need out of that experience, whether or not anybody else or whether or not a lot of other people come along.
I totally get that. Yeah, I totally get that. I feel that way in many aspects of my business and course making. It's so fulfilling and fun and interesting. And I get what you mean about that journey that's personally fulfilling to you.
Yes. Yeah. So if you thought that, if this thing that you're thinking about launching is going to be personally fulfilling enough that you can show up every day for it, for the either few people or a lot of people that come along, but your needs are truly getting met.
Yeah.
Then it's, to me, that's the perfect thing. Do it. I don't even think too hard. It's do that thing.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's really great. That's great that is just a really great philosophy.
And I mean, I don't know how long of a personal commitment you would be making to the thing that you're thinking about launching. Like, is it 6 weeks? Is it 6 months? Is it a year? I mean, really any, okay, so let's talk about this. Any online course that you release on your own is always the type of risk that I'm talking about. Because when anyone has an idea for an online course, you never know in advance if people are going to sign up for it.
So true. Yeah.
And it takes months, at least for me, it takes months and months, at least 3 months to film, like pretty much at least part-time for 3 months to film one course.
Right.
Why I release so few.
Right.
But so no matter what, you're always basically taking a big risk. that your time is not going to equate to a financial reward. And you've got to love that thing so much and the idea of sharing it with others, right? Because it's not only do I love this thing, but I love the idea that even if only 5 other people signed up for the course, it would have been totally worth 3 months of my part-time labor to create this thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I love that thing so much. And I feel that what I want to share with people about that thing is enough to keep me showing up every day and filming and pouring my heart into this.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes tons of sense. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it does. It's a different model than the traditional working model where you go in, you get your hours, you get your paycheck, you know what you're getting. There is that risk of not knowing and putting in a lot of work. But I love that because if you are connected to the work and you love what you're doing, and that is its reward. And then the few or many people who show up at the end to love on them, nurture them, help them, inspire them, support them. I mean, that's so meaningful. That's what I hear too with what you're saying is just the meaning in the journey, the meaning in the relationships that you build, the support that you offer, that vision that you bring to life. Starting from nothing and bringing life is pretty magical, really.
So I know that there's been a lot of like really negative stuff about capitalism. Like we've kind of entered a like phase in our culture where there's just a lot of people who are really anti-capitalistic, but I am not anti-capitalistic. I am very pro-capitalism because capitalism creates this space where that level of creativity exists. You take a huge risk and there could be no reward. There could be some reward, but there could be a very large reward. That reward could be emotional, financial, whatever that is. I think it's healthier for people to have the option. If I want safety, I'm going to get a job at a grocery store and I'm going to get a paycheck every week. But if I want to do risk and reward, there has to be that option where I could be rewarded.
Yeah, you have.
I like capitalism.
Given that opportunity for autonomy, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
All right. That was a lot for anyone listening.
It was interesting, though. And hopefully other people, I mean, so many people, even if you're not venturing out into an art course, although if you're venturing out into an art business, hopefully this is helpful. But even if not, I mean, lots of people are venturing into new things in their life and fear is universal. Even working hard towards a known reward is universal. So I'm sure that there's lots of listeners who want to embark on something new or who are in the middle of something and hopefully they'll be able to take something out of it.
Oh, I have no doubt. I definitely know that people love conversations like this, whether they're going to become an online art teacher or that's the last thing they want to do because they want to launch something else or whatever it is, that this conversation is definitely a hot topic. Anytime I've ever blogged about it, it's gotten a lot of response. Anytime I've talked about it, people just like it. People are fascinated by it.
Yeah, it is fascinating to pull back the curtain, see what's behind the curtain, see what's really going on.
See what's really going on. Yeah, that was a whole lot of what's really going on right there.
Yeah, it sure was. That's the real deal. Authentic.
Hashtag authentic. That was right. Authentic. So actually, there's one other thing that I wanted to mention, and that is related to what we just talked about. And maybe this will make sense to you and everyone else, is the Fodder School model is not a membership in the classic sense of a membership model where people buy in and it's for whatever dollars per month. You can stay a member for years and years because it's a membership and whoever creates the membership is just going to keep creating content year after year or month after month. So I'm sure you're very familiar with a membership model. You know, sure. A gym is a membership or certain online art courses are memberships. So the idea that I would have to remain passionate about a specific topic scared me.
Mm.
Because I didn't know, like, I might burn out on a topic.
Sure.
And so I didn't want to launch a membership.
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. Yeah, that's a really high commitment, a high consistent commitment.
Yes. And I don't know if you're in your mind, you're thinking about having a membership, but I think if anyone out there is listening, or even if you are, a membership model is like a forever model, kind of. I mean, of course, you can always end your membership, but in order to end a membership, it's a lot more dramatic than just having something naturally come to its end and saying, oh, I'm doing something else now. I'm not repeating what I did last year. So I don't know, again, I don't know if that's part of what you're thinking.
Right. No, I'm definitely thinking of a course, something that's maybe like 4 to 6 weeks. I would love to have some sort of live component, a Zoom component to it so that we can get to know each other. I want to really build up the community so that it feels safe so we can explore and chat with each other and feel less alone. It reminds me, when I taught classes in person, we would do these sort of self-exploration classes. I teach this online as well, but it's a class where you have a bird and a bird's nest, and inside the nest with the little pieces of the nest, you put in what you want to let go of or what you want to pull into your life. You write it on these little strips of paper and create this nest. And so it's very personalized. And so we created this in person. And then I asked if anyone wanted to share. And I didn't know if anyone, this was the first time, and I didn't know if anyone would, because it was a very personal. And someone very sheepishly raised their hand, and just one person. And I said, well, I'll share. And so they started to go into the story of what they wanted to pull into their lives, what they wanted to let go of. And sure enough, as soon as that happens, all the hands in the room shoot up. Everyone starts to share. And what people realize is how not alone they are. No matter what their life circumstances, whatever they're going through, or whatever they're desiring or wanting or dreaming of, is so common and such a connector. And so by the end, everyone is, me too. It's so true. And then they're exchanging phone numbers and wanting to get together again and building relationships. And that's what a piece that I would love to see in this course that I want to create is that deeper community aspect where we share and support and build that just like in a regular in-person class.
So something like that experience by its very nature may need to be more limited in the number of participants.
Right.
So yeah. I don't think you're going to have a problem filling your class, because I think that isn't something that 1,000 people are going to be able to experience all together.
Right. It's
true. That's something where you're trying to actually build actual, real, safe space for people. I don't know what to call it, but like places where people are really sharing. And that's the kind of thing where people don't want to share that with 1,000 people. They want to share that with 10 people or 20 people or 30 people, but it's not a mass thing.
Yeah, that's kind of the vision that I have for it. Something that's really, more intimate, deeper, still very fun, but has a deep element to it. And just a really interesting self-exploration through the art, and our artistic voice. And how do we bring art to soothe? And I want to talk about art too, like rule of thirds and composition and all of those things. But I want to talk about being free and letting go. I was part of an art show one time, and my artwork is very colorful and very wild and has a lot of layers. And there's just a lot of expression in the artwork that I make. And I was with amazing artists in this show, really good artists. And there was one in particular who was a colored pencil artist, which is very detailed, right? Very realistic and very detailed. And she came over to my booth and she just had this dreamy look in her eye. And she says, that the artwork that I have, that's the artwork I have to make. But this artwork, pointing to my artwork, is the art I wish I could make. And she was saying, like, not because it was so amazing, like I was a better artist or anything like that. It was just so free. It was free and open and wild. And I think so many of us crave that in our art, to feel open, to feel safe, to feel free, to be able to find our artistic voice or forget it, that it doesn't matter. We just want to get lost in that creative process. And so that's what I'm hoping it will bring to people.
lost in the creative process. That is my favorite place to be.
Yeah.
Lost. All right. On that note, I think we're going to call it a day for recording this podcast. Let's remind everybody one more time where they can find you on Instagram so that they can follow you. And if they want to get on your mailing list, maybe they're like, that's just the course I imagine I need. They want to be waiting for that time where you launch it. Let's just tell everybody one more time where to find it.
Yeah. So it's shaymichelle.com. Actually, I'm getting ready to put out a little free course. It's going to be a little taster of the big course. So if you're curious, that is coming very soon within the next week or two. We're talking in June. So shaymichelle.com. You can sign up for it there. Sign up for my newsletter if you'd like. And you can find me also at Shay Michelle Studios on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. It was a pleasure getting to know you better, Shay. And we're going to be working together for a whole year.
Yes, it was so nice to get to know you too. I really enjoyed this conversation so much.
All right. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Sure. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Show Up or Shut Up podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast and leave a rating and review. And once again, you can find me, Wendy, free gifts for newsletter subscribers, online classes with me and many other incredible instructors, my blog, and everything else at willowwanders.com and on Instagram at willa.wanders. Talk to you soon. Until then, stay curious and keep making.